What's going on, y'all? Fatboy Chronicles talking to you today. What's going on with everybody? I appreciate everybody that listens. Thank you so much. And those who don't listen, well, you missing out on some real ish around this camp. So, jumping into my podcast, I'm going to continue my series, Growing Up in San Francisco. I paused a little bit because I wanted to give the Bucks a little love and just take a little break, but now I'm back at it. So, here we go. Jumping right back into it, growing up in San Francisco. So, as a kid, as I was stating previously in my other podcast about this particular series, I grew up in San Francisco, California during the 80s and the 90s, which was crazy times, crack epidemic, huge, and that rolled right over into the 90s, gang banging, different things that were going on in the 90s, the three strike laws that came down as a result of the 80s, from Bill Clinton when he made the three strikes law, which I don't understand why black people always talking about Bill Clinton was the first black president because he smoked some weed. I think that was the dumbest thing ever, but that's neither here nor there. Here's my thing. I grew up in San Francisco. I stayed in Sunnydale Projects, one of the worst neighborhoods in San Francisco, California. Could be considered one of the worst neighborhoods in the country. And I grew up in that wonderfully dysfunctional, confusing, crazy, beautiful place. That was some old army barracks from World War II and turned into low-income housing for San Francisco residents, particularly African-American residents. And then, of course, you know how that all rolled into one during the 70s and the 80s and the different things like that. So, continuing what I was talking about, at this particular time, I'm maybe about, we're in like the later part of the 80s, we're going into the 90s. I'm probably about 9 or 10. I'm attending Edgewood Children's Center. If no one knows what Edgewood Children's Center is, it is a place for young children to get help for their disabilities, whether it's physical disabilities, learning disabilities, mental disabilities. It is a place that was built as an orphanage in the 1800s, I believe, or the early 1900s, and it's been around for hundreds of years. It's a place where I learned to become a young man, where I learned to stand up for myself, and where I learned to accept other people for their shortcomings or flaws or different things, because I had a hard time with that as a kid. I always felt like people that didn't get it like I did or understand it like I did were slow or goofy or whatever, but I learned to understand other people's flaws and different things like that. But anyway, I'm going to Edgewood at this particular time, and I'm going there because I have a learning disability, not necessarily for my mental health. Later, that was kind of later on, I went there for my mental health, because I suffer from anxiety, depression, PTSD, different things. I've been diagnosed with all these different things. I do suffer from those. I do not take medication for those particular situations because of the simple fact of the only medication that I really take is marijuana. And that's because it does something to me, and it kind of lowers my anxiety. It lowers my depression. It lowers my PTSD. When I'm not smoking marijuana, all that stuff comes back. It's crazy. It's ridiculous. And I don't like taking pills. I've taken pills most of my life. As a child, from between 9 and 10, probably even earlier than that, the earliest time I remember taking a pill was Ritalin. Ritalin was the biggest thing on the market at one time, for kids that were hyperactive, or ADHD, as they called it. I never called it ADHD or ADD. I just call the kids that weren't being stimulated and they needed something to stimulate them. But the response that America did was basically, let's give them all Ritalin. And Ritalin, as everybody knows, is just another form of crack. If you do the DNA, if you do the chemical equations to Ritalin, it is crack cocaine. So nobody knew that at the time, but I would take Ritalin and it would just slow me down. It would just kind of calm me down. I would just sit there like a zombie, really, because it was a downer. It was totally like, as a kid, you're supposed to be hyper. You're supposed to be active. You're supposed to be energetic. But I guess I was a little too energetic and it kind of just slowed me down. I ended up taking other medications, Paxil, Ritalin, Prosera, it's some other ones, Mipramine, there's some other ones that are out there, antidepressants that are out there that I ended up taking as well. This is between the age of 9 or 10. Most of the kids that I went to school with in San Francisco were African American and they were on Ritalin. And I think Ritalin was particularly targeted to African Americans at that particular time because we were just hyperactive kids. We never looked at it as, oh, it was a problem. We were just hyper kids. We were just kids with a lot of energy, as most kids should be. At this particular time, I had my first girlfriend. Yes, I had my first girlfriend in San Francisco, California. My first girlfriend, her name was Rebecca Somach. Rebecca Somach. I had to been about 9, 8, 9, and Rebecca was about my age. And I just remember this girl was just in love with me. Mind you, I know it don't matter, but she was white. And this girl loved the heck out of me. She was not the most attractive white girl at all, but she was the nicest. She was the nicest and the sweetest young lady I had ever met. I remember she gave me money. She would buy me stuff. She would take me places. Like, of course, you know, our parents would have to take us, but we would just do stuff together. I remember one time she came to my house. We hung out for some hours. And she was a Jewish white girl. And that was my first girlfriend. And I never thought about much of it because I was always the tall, awkward kid, the weird looking kid. I never thought in a million years that she would like me in that manner. But then later on, she started treating me mean and stuff like that. So, you know, we kind of grew up together from like first grade on. And we didn't go to high school or nothing together, but we did go to middle school together. And, you know, she was my first girlfriend. That's all I could tell you. Rebecca Somach, if you out there, appreciate you. First girlfriend. So, rolling into the later part of the 80s and going into the earlier part of the 90s, I'm going to tell you what I was listening to at that particular time. So, in the late 80s, it was not a lot of hip-hop. I mean, hip-hop was around. In the early parts of the 80s, you really didn't hear a lot of hip-hop. MTV was really big, but it was more rock-driven. It wasn't hip-hop per se. The first hip-hop I even saw was Run-DMC on MTV. That was my first introduction to hip-hop on MTV. And then later on, you know, we had Yo MTV Raps, you know, with Fab Five Freddy. Shout out to Fab Five Freddy. Appreciate you, bro. You part of my childhood. Appreciate you. Thank you so much. And that was my introduction to hip-hop. But I was an R&B head. Like, I listened to a ton of R&B. Luther Vandross is probably one of my favorite R&B artists. Whitney, Aretha, Gosh, it's so many. Shaka. Oh gosh, it's just so many that I loved back then. Anita Baker. Yeah, it's just so many. It was so many that I can think of right now, but those are the main ones that pop out in my head. Stevie Wonder. I just listen to a lot of R&B, a lot of older R&B, newer R&B, like Keep Sweat, Babyface, Teddy Riley. Who else was around at that time? Boys to Men were kind of seeping into there. Of course, New Edition. It was just a lot of great groups at that particular time. A lot of great R&B music. Bobby Brown, of course, fantastic artist. Yeah, just a lot of great R&B artists back in the day, new and old at that particular moment. But sliding into, you know, the end of the 80s, hip hop was starting to push an envelope that I was loving. And the envelope was Black Power and Black Empowerment. And I know for my white listeners, let me be honest with you, I know when y'all hear Black Power, you think of the Black Panthers. I'm gonna be completely honest with you. When I was growing up, I was introduced to Black Panthers. I met Huey P. Newton personally. He came to my school to speak. He was a fantastic man. I love Huey P. Newton. Shout out to Huey P. Newton. And he came and talked to us and sat down and, you know, just told us a bunch of different things at that particular moment. A lot of people in the Bay remember Huey for what he did, but a lot of them remember for what he became later on, which was, no disrespect, but a dope fiend. He ended up actually getting killed behind the same exact things that he was preaching against. He ended up getting killed for in Oakland. But he was a great man, and he was a smart man, an intelligent man, a fantastic man. He was great. I just remember him coming to my school and speaking. I don't really remember too much of the rhetoric at the time, but I do remember one of my teachers explaining to me the significance of who Huey P. Newton was and what he represented. And that was the thing when I was going to school as well. I had teachers that were Afrocentric, who were totally into Blackness, everything about Black folks, everything that I needed to know about who I was as a Black man, as a young Black man. I learned in my schools at Edgewood. We had plenty of counselors and teachers who were great at teaching that. And one of the things that I learned later on was the significance of living in San Francisco and living across from Oakland and Richmond and these different places that a lot of people wouldn't have even thought about visiting or coming to. But because of the movements that came out of those areas, it was just fantastic. Me personally, I could just go on and on about the history of the Bay, but I'm specifically staying with San Francisco. But anyway, I love the Black Power movement that was going on in the late 80s, early 90s. That was awesome. Malcolm X came out a couple years later in about 92, and that completely changed the narrative on everything. Malcolm X was a game changer. Of course, you know, later on I find out that it was way more to the story, but it was a game changer. It was excellent. It was awesome. Definitely Denzel deserved an Oscar for it. Of course, he didn't get it. He got it for Training Day for being a bad guy, but we're not finna get into that. But I think it was an awesome movie. It was great. It was dope. Spike Lee was the man at the time. He was doing Mo' Better Blues. He was doing Do the Right Thing. All those movies had racial components to it, which, you know, I thought was dope. And yeah, just it was a weird dynamic in the 80s, in the early 80s, late 80s. It was a weird dynamic because of the crack and different things. But a lot of wonderful, great things came out of that, came out of that situation in that era. Not glorifying crack at all. I think that was the most devastating thing to the black community next to slavery. That destroyed families in ways you can never imagine. So that particular time, I just seen it all. I seen the Dookie Broke Chains. I seen the we wore Dickies and stuff like that. Like, we wore Jordaches and Lee jeans and Levi's and different things like that. We wore that back in the day. We weren't into the Kangos and the different things. That was more of a New York style. The Bay was more t-shirts, jeans, you know, nice clean tennies, Adidas, Nikes. Reebok really wasn't a big shoe at that particular time, but those were the shoes that we wore. Shell-toed Adidas, those was like the biggest thing. That was on either coast. We wore all that stuff. Converses, Nike Cortezes. That's what the Mexican homies, shout out to the Mexican homies, the SAs. Shout out to my SAs and my Mexican folks out there. But that's what we was wearing out there in Cali. We was doing it real big in the Dickies and the khakis and different things like that. We was real West Coast in it. So that was the dress and different things that went on back then. So then we come to the 90s, and I'm going to start at about 90, and then I'm going to cut it off because I want to make sure I go into the next chapter and y'all can know, you know, what went on in the 90s and different things like that in San Francisco. So 90 came around, and that was an interesting year. I was about 9, going on 10 or so, and my grandfather passed at that particular time. My grandfather was, his name was Nathaniel Long. He was married to my grandmother. They were two very tall people. I find out later, I thought it was out of love, and I find out later it was partially love, but it was mostly a benefit to both of them because they were taller people. They didn't think, you know, women, I guess, didn't like taller men at that particular moment. So it just fit well with them. He was about 6'4". My grandmother was 6'6". So it just fit well for them. My mom, he was my mom's stepfather. He was a great man. Of course, he had flaws. He had downfalls. He was addicted to drugs. Crack. Cocaine. Whatever it was at that particular moment, he was addicted to that. He actually ended up passing from that. But he was a great man. Alcohol, he did alcohol as well, but he never, ever, ever treated me horribly. Never hit me, never. I can't even remember him yelling at me for anything. But he was a great man. He was a good man. When he was sober, he was one of the greatest men. Even when he was drunk, high, different things like that, he was just a good dude. He wasn't out there doing wrong to people or stealing or raping or doing any of those stupid things that people do. He was just a man that got caught up in a situation. He had went to Vietnam. He got addicted to drugs actually when he went to Vietnam, which is a whole nother podcast I can get into. But he was just a fantastic man. And he passed away right at a crucial time for me. I was just turning maybe 9, 10-ish. And actually, I was nine at the time. And he passed away right when I was learning. I was going into that teenage years, that manhood, learning about myself and different things like that, and self-esteem and stuff like that. He was teaching me all kinds of things about how to be a male, how to be a man, how to stand on my 10 toes, how to handle my business, take care of home, different things like that. He was teaching me all that. Even though he was addicted to what he was addicted to, it didn't stop him from teaching. He was a great man. Shout out to Nathaniel Long. I love you to death. I love you forever. I appreciate you and everything that you brought to me and taught me. I still use today. And thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right, y'all. Fat Boy Chronicles, you know where I be. Get at me.